నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
ఫ్రమ్ ద సెవెంత్ క్యాంటో చాప్టర్ 9, చాప్టర్ ఎంటైటిల్ ప్రహ్లాద్ పాసిఫైస్ ద లార్డ్ విత్ ప్రేయర్స్, టెక్స్ట్ నంబర్ 11.
ఆత్మనా ప్రభురయం నిజలాభ పూర్ణో మానం జనాద విదుషా కరుణో వృణీతే యద్యజ్జనో భగవతే విదధీత మానం తచ్చాత్మనే ప్రతిముఖస్య యతముఖాశ్రీ.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always fully satisfied in Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering by the Lord's mercy is for the benefit of the devotee, for the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Purport. In Bhakti Yoga, it is recommended that a devotee follows 9 principles: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on is not, of course, meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended for the benefit of the devotee. The Lord is always glorious, whether the devotee glorifies Him or not. But if the devotee engages in glorifying the Lord, the devotee himself automatically becomes glorious. Cheto darpanamajanam bhavamaha davagni nirvapanam. By glorifying the Lord constantly, the living entity becomes purified in the core of his heart. And thus he can understand that he does not belong to the material world, but is a spirit soul whose actual activity is to advance in Krishna consciousness, so that he may become free from the material clutches. Thus the blazing fire of material existence is immediately extinguished. Bhava maha davagni nirvapanam. A foolish person is amazed that Krishna orders, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of religious activities and just surrender unto me. Some foolish scholars even say that this is too much to demand. But this demand is not for the benefit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, it is for the benefit of human society. If human beings individually and collectively surrender everything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in full Krishna consciousness, all of human society will benefit. One who does not dedicate everything to the Supreme Lord is described in this verse as avidusa, a rascal. In Bhagavad Gita 7.15, the Lord Himself speaks in the same way. Namam duskritino muda prapadyante naradama mayaya partha jnana asuram bhavam asritaha. Those miscreants who are grossly foolish, lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Because of ignorance and misfortune, the atheists and the Naradamas, the lowest of men, do not surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, although the Supreme Lord Krishna is full in Himself, He appears in different yugas to demand the surrender of the conditioned souls, so that they will benefit by becoming free from the material clutches. In conclusion, the more we engage in Krishna consciousness and render service unto the Lord, the more we benefit. Krishna does not need service from any of us. Listen again. The Supreme Lord, seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas here, will try to speak something on this very beautiful verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto. So we are seeing over here Prahlad Maharaj trying to pacify the Lord by glorifying Him. And in this purport, Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear that actually it is the Lord who is insisting that we surrender to Him for our own benefit. It is not for the Lord's benefit that He wants us to surrender to Him, because the Lord is complete in everything, complete in all respects. And a person who is complete in all respects does not need anything. So we are the people who are actually in need. And by glorifying the Lord and by surrendering unto Him, we are actually fulfilling our need to surrender to somebody. We see in this material world that every living entity has several needs. And the greatest need that is felt by every living entity is a need to gratify his senses. This is the feeling that he has right from the time that he is born till the time that he leaves his body. Somehow or the other, try to find out ways and means to gratify his senses. And this is the need that we are born with in this material world. Because this need for gratifying our senses arises because of our independent nature. Although we were with Krishna, enjoying with Him, and having only one need at that point of time, that is glorifying the Lord and associating with Him, glorifying the devotees and associating with them. That is the only perceived need that we had. But because we wanted to be independent of Krishna, and because we wanted to be separate from Krishna, we have been put into this material world. And in this material world, when we come into contact with material nature, then we have so many needs. Srila Prabhupada would say that when we don't need Krishna, then we need material nature. So either we take shelter of Krishna or we take shelter of material nature. I remember when I was in college, studying for my commerce course, we had a theory called Maslow's theory of need hierarchy. Most of the devotees here are engineers, so they may not know this. This need hierarchy theory always existed. It was never that it was not there. From the time we have been born, from the time this material universe has been created, this need hierarchy theory has been there. But because this particular person sort of put it together, he gave his name to it. Just like this law of gravity was discovered by Isaac Newton. The law of gravity always existed. It was not that all of a sudden one day Isaac Newton discovered this law of gravity. It always existed. But it's just that at that particular point of time, Krishna gave him the intelligence to give it a particular name. That is the reason why it was named after him. So similarly, this Maslow's need hierarchy theory was found by Maslow somewhere in the 18th or 19th century. Now this need hierarchy theory basically talks about the need of a person and how these needs graduate as he becomes more and more economically advanced. The basic needs for a person is food, clothing and shelter. Right? And even in these basic needs, there are different grades, there are different qualities of, or rather different abilities by which a man can satisfy this basic need for food, clothing and shelter. Even the poorest of the poor somehow or the other he is satisfying this basic need. He has maybe just one meal a day and is wearing rags and he sleeps out in the street. So he has his basic needs satisfied of food, clothing and shelter. And a very wealthy person may be having very opulent food, maybe very having very opulent clothing and also an opulent house to live in. But ultimately these are the basic needs. And for every human being, once his basic needs are satisfied, then he graduates into a higher need. So after he satisfies this need of food, clothing and shelter, then he goes to satisfy his mental needs. So these are the physical needs of the body, and after that he satisfies his mental needs, the needs of the mind, which is basically for name, fame, glory, prestige, power, what Maslow described as self-actualization. He would like to advance in getting all this abilities. But for a devotee, what is actually self-actualization? A devotee also strives for self-actualization. But a devotee strives for self-actualization in terms of surrendering to the Lord. The unfortunate part of this material world is that if a person was just satisfied with his basic needs and then he wanted to self-actualize his consciousness by surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then everybody in this material world would have been devotees. But because of this greed, because of this propensity in himself to enjoy his senses, he wants to have a better and better and better quality of the same necessities. Food, clothing and shelter. The necessities remain the same. Like we were listening to a class of Srila Prabhupada today morning. Prabhupada was saying that ultimately, what is it that you require in order to maintain your body and soul together? You require a few chapatis. A rich man also eats a few chapatis. A poor man also eats a few chapatis. So what's the difference? More often than not, we see, at least nowadays, a poor man may be able to eat chapatis, but a rich man can't eat chapatis. He's eating more medicines than chapatis. All sorts of diseases are prevalent in his body. Diabetes, blood pressure, stress. Where does he have time to eat chapatis? Recently, we were all discussing, and the point was made that even children, just about 30 or 40 years back, when we were in school, we would be having such a comfortable time in terms of having our food, breakfast, lunch and dinner. Breakfast we would be having at home, lunch we would have at home, dinner also we would have at home. Right? All the family members would get together and have these three meals a day. But nowadays, breakfast for a child means having it in the bus. Or when his mother is tying his shoelaces, he has his chapatis. And lunch means carrying a small dabba of food, which has become so cold. And actually, by the definition in the Srimad, in the Bhagavad Gita, this food is actually in the mode of ignorance because it's more than 3 hours old by the time a person consumes it. Cold food is what the child has to eat because the school goes right from 8 o'clock in the morning till 4 o'clock in the evening. So there's only one meal that a child actually has. That is at home along with his family members. He has his dinner. And the same thing happens to the person who works out in the office. He has to leave home at 6 o'clock in the morning. That's not a time to have breakfast. He just has a glass of milk and leaves. And then he's in the office the whole day. He doesn't even have the time to go to the restaurant or to the canteen to have his lunch. He gets his lunch on the table. And in fact, now the organizations have made the whole concept of providing for the necessities of an office goer to such a fine art. that just as the press of a button, a person can practically order anything and everything on his table. Earlier, at least, there used to be a lunch break of 1 hour. But now there is so much of work and so much of pressure on the individual that there is no lunch break. The lunch break that he has is just 10 minutes, and that too he'll be sitting on the computer giving a few commands and waiting for the computer to reciprocate. And that's the time when he munches a sandwich or drinks his Coke. And practically this is what is happening. My nephew who is in Chicago, he was telling us that his organization, very well paid, he did his engineering over here, went to the US, did his MS, and got into an investment banking company. And today, although he gets more than $120,000 or $130,000 a year, which is far above the American wage, I was just reading the papers a couple of days back that a typical American earns $40,000 a year. So an Indian in America earning $120,000 means three times the average wage. So it's very good, a very good salary. But this nephew of mine was telling me that he works in the office for 14 hours a day. He reaches office at 8 o'clock in the morning, and never before 10 o'clock in the evening he leaves his office. And because he works in such a high pressure organization, which is so much into investment banking and investment in the stock market and so on, he doesn't even have time to go to the restaurant or to go to the canteen for lunch. He gets lunch on his table. And the company has made facilities whereby everybody can just pick up the phone and, you know, he feels so nice that I'm ordering something from my work table. But actually, he doesn't realize that he's been made a fool of by the company. The company doesn't want him to go down to the canteen and waste an hour, because that 1 hour that this person would be wasting in the canteen is so precious for the company. Rather than that, bring your food to the table. And then this person is so much engrossed in just typing his few keys, seeing that computer screen in front of him. And he just eats. He doesn't even know what he's eating, because he can't taste. When you're absorbed doing, particularly in the computer, and all of us have sometime or other done this, when we are so absorbed looking at the computer screen, and you're eating something, you don't even know that you're finished eating. Right? After some time, you look at your plate and it's empty. Where has it gone? What has happened to the food? And this is what people do day in and day out. Till the end of their lives. Or till the end of their working lives at least. And nowadays, really, there's no end to the working life of a person. Because after he retires, official age for retirement is 60. And then if he is really required by the company, then he is offered the position of a consultant. Because the company cannot officially take him on board as an employee. Because he's already completed 60 years. He's supposed to be retired as per the government laws. So he cannot be there in the company even for 1 day after he's 60 years of age. But the company needs him. And this person also feels that I'm still young. I can still work. I'm still active. And more often than not, he doesn't have any bank balance. His children are married, his daughters have got married, and all his bank balance is over, and he still has to work. So he's taken on board as a consultant. And then initially the term is for 1 year, then after that another year and another year. And before he realizes it, he's 75 years of age. And he's still a consultant. Still going to the company every day in the morning, coming back in the evening, earning a few rupees. So at least in the good old days, there used to be what is called as a retirement age, where a person would retire from his company and go and settle in the village. Everybody would be looking forward to that. And everybody would be constructing homes in the village. They would have a home over here, and then they would have a home house also in the village, waiting for them to retire. When will I retire? Particularly when he reaches the age of 55, he's always already counting. Okay, 5 years to go, 4 years to go, 3 years to go. And then finally the day comes, and then he retires. And then he goes to the village. He's no longer there in the city. Because that is the natural order by which a person has to progress. He has to retire at a particular point of time and go and settle down in a village. Or in strictly speaking, he should be settling down in a forest. Most of the villages are located close to forests, at least. So he goes and settles down over there, and then You know, he waits for days to pass. But today, the situation is that a human being has to work and work and work and work till the end of his life. And some people really take pleasure in announcing that I am 76 years of age and I'm working as a director in this company and I'm working as a CEO in that company. But such fools. So this need, which is basically that basic need of the human being, which a person is trying to satisfy, is actually leading to greed. There's not much of a difference actually in one sense. Somebody was trying to tell me what is the difference between need and greed. The greed looks like need. The last three letters are the same, E-E-D, eed. That G-R, the word G-R is actually grrr, grrr, greed. It's growling. The whole phenomenon of greed growls in your consciousness. Tells you to earn more and more and more and more. And today what we are seeing, this whole economic collapse that has taken place in the last few days, all of us have been deluged with news of how practically the whole of America has been brought down to its knees. And along with America, also the whole world has been put into a financial unstable mode. Billions of dollars. Banks are wanting to lend to people who have no ability to pay. That's what has happened. Over the years, over the last 40 years, banks have been giving money to people for buying homes, and these people had absolutely no ability to repay the money. But the bank never cared. Because the whole economy was in such a state of boom, the bank was thinking that in case it doesn't pay, after a few years, I'll be able to take over that home. And once I take over that home value will be much higher than what was originally given as a loan to the person. And then I'll sell that home, I'll make so much money. So with that in mind, and because the property market also was booming, the banks just continued to lend and lend and lend. And in fact, there were agents who were approaching people to borrow money. They were giving inducements and they were giving incentives to people to borrow money. It was not as if people were approaching the bank. That's how in a traditional system that happens. When I require a loan, I approach a bank. Correct? So this is all something that we are used to. When we need a loan, we approach somebody. But in America, the situation was exactly the opposite. The banks and their agents would approach people and tell them, please, they'll fall at their feet. Say, please take this loan. This loan is good for you. And they would do such a hard sell. They would do so much of marketing to make that person take this loan. And this fellow would be thinking, my God, I don't have this ability to pay this loan, and this bank, such a stupid bank, they didn't even know that I don't have the ability to pay, and they are falling on my feet, asking me to take this loan. So this fellow would be very happy and think to himself, oh, it's very nice. And then you take this loan, purchase this house. And after a few years, invariably, when he's not in a position to pay, the bank would take that house back. But what happened today was something that the banks never anticipated. If they were giving these loans to a few individuals, then there would have been no problem. It is just that every household, practically every household in America, had taken a loan to buy their house. And if a person bought his house out of his own savings, he was considered to be a fool. There was no question of anybody buying a house out of his own savings. He had to buy it on a mortgage. It had to be mortgaged. The house had to be mortgaged. And not just one mortgage, second mortgage, third mortgage, fourth mortgage. So many mortgages on the same asset they would keep creating. So you have a house which is purchased at $100,000. So you take a mortgage of $80,000 on that. So this is the first mortgage. After 5 years, the value of the house has become $200,000. Then you need more money. So you go to the bank and tell the bank the value of the house has now become $200,000. Please give me some more loan. The bank says, oh yes, the value of the house has become $200,000. Here is another $80,000. So the second mortgage. On the same asset. Then a third mortgage and a fourth mortgage. So after the end of about 15 years, when this person should have actually repaid his original loan, he is having such a huge amount of debt on his head, invariably he will not be able to pay. So this escalated to such an extent that practically every second household in America today is in a situation where they cannot pay their loans. So gradually it so started happening that these banks were acquiring these properties. And finally, the amount of properties that came into the market was like a deluge. It was so huge that there were no takers for these houses. Nobody wanted to buy these houses. Nobody could afford to buy these houses. Even if they wanted to buy, they couldn't afford it. So then the banks started selling it at distress rates. But still there were no people ready to come and forward and buy it. And the person who is asked to vacate his house, it's called as a foreclosure. The person who is asked to vacate his house, you know, what can he do? He doesn't have the money to repay. He doesn't have a house now to stay in. Where is the question of him repaying any part of the loan? He's on the street. He goes to the government saying that, I don't have any money now, you please give me a house. And the government, being a socially secured government, it secures you, tells you that I protect you from the womb to the tomb. It gives him some money to go and rent a house. So this is social security. So that person goes and rents a house and he stays comfortably and he stays happily ever after. And in the meantime, this property that has been taken over by the bank has got no value. And there is this huge amount of debt that this person has not paid. So as on date, this amount has come up to something like over $1 trillion. Now, $1 trillion means $1,000 billion. This is a mind-boggling figure. Absolutely unbelievable. And big banks, and you know, these are guys who have been there in existence for over 150 years. Just overnight, collapsed. So you can imagine a situation where they have given money to this borrower, depositor's money that they have actually taken from the depositor, they've given it to this borrower, the borrowers are not paying. What happens to the depositors? So this is the pathetic condition of the economy today. And why this has happened? What is the root cause of this unbelievable amount of greed? Somehow or the other, let me make this particular necessity or this need of food, clothing and shelter to such an extent that come what may, beg, borrow or steal, I will gratify my senses. So this is a desperate need to satisfy their and gratify their senses that has resulted in such a pathetic situation that is there before us today. And it is said that the economy will take several years before it recovers. And it's true. And the implications of this are being felt all over the world. Even a protected economy like India is feeling its effects. If only this desperate amount of greed was transferred to Krishna. So you can imagine what would have happened. So Krishna consciousness is the solution to somehow or the other transfer this greed that we have for gratifying our senses to taking shelter of Krishna. We need to take desperate shelter of Krishna. Just like how Rukmini took shelter of Krishna. She was in such a pathetic state of mind. You can imagine, this Brahmana had gone and to deliver this letter to Krishna. And the time had come for her to get married, and she had gone to this temple to take blessings of Durga Mata. And she's waiting for Krishna to come, but Krishna is nowhere to be seen. She has so much anxiety. One sannyasi was saying that she was put into so much anxiety by Krishna. Actually, Krishna could have come there in a second, in one sense, or a fraction of a second. But he waited till her anxiety became a desperate cry. And then when she had practically given up all hopes, at that time Krishna came and took her. And similarly, Draupadi, when she was being disrobed, she tried her level best to protect herself. But how could she protect herself from Dushasan, who is supposed to be having this strength of 10,000 elephants? One human being having the strength of 10,000 elephants. So you can imagine how strong he was. And Draupadi was an ordinary housewife, frail. So till the time that she tried to cover herself with her own efforts, Krishna never manifested in front of her. But the moment she let go, and the moment she put up her hands and cried out, "Hey Govinda, hey Krishna," Krishna manifested himself. Also Dhruva Maharaj. Now Dhruva Maharaj was like any child trying to take security of his father. Now this is another need that all of us have, the need for security. All of us have that basic need again of security, trying to somehow or the other make our position secure. Not position, make our situation secure. So a 5-year-old child like Dhruva also wanted the security of his father's lap. And this was a security that his father could not provide him because of his stepmother. Of course, the father did not reject him, but the father took a neutral stand. And in some cases, taking a neutral stand is taking a very positive stand also. So although Uttanapad did not want to display, he didn't want to displace his wife, Suruchi. He didn't want to displace his son also. So as his wife was making all the statements to Dhruva, he just kept quiet. And Dhruva, who was trying to take security of his father's lap, looked at his father to see whether his father is going to support him or not. And he was completely devastated when he saw that there was no support coming. And eventually Dhruva took security of his mother. He took shelter of his mother, who gave him the instruction, "Now you go to the forest. That is the place where you'll find Narayan." And then in the forest he meets Narad Muni. And then he does this extreme tapasya. The tapasya was so intense. It was intense because he took shelter of Krishna. Once he took complete shelter of Krishna, then Krishna manifested himself in front of him as Narayan. So the only alternative for us to get over this cycle of birth and death in this material world, which is caused by our insatiable lust, greed, is to take desperate shelter of Krishna. And we are so fortunate that we are there in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is giving us this facility to take shelter of Krishna through the chanting of the holy names, through the deities, We were recently in Pandharpur, and we were seeing how intensely the devotees of Lord Vittal were coming to take darshan of the Lord. It was so intense. The first darshan of the Lord is at 4 o'clock in the morning. In order to take darshan at 4 o'clock in the morning, you have to be there before the gate at 2:30. So that you get, because they allow only a certain number of people inside. And I was thinking to myself that we are so fortunate. We came there at 2:30 and then we were practically the first to come into the, just before the gate. And there were so many people who were coming, and there was so much of intense concentration, so much of intense desire to wait for the gate to open. People were just congregating and somebody was climbing on top and trying to reach inside. And then the door opened, and then all of us went inside, and then for 2 hours we were there before the Lord. And I was thinking to myself that actually Radha Gopinath is also here in this temple. And they are giving darshan right from morning 5 o'clock till 9 o'clock in the evening. But there's no mad stampede. Why is it that there's no mad stampede to come before the Lord? There's no difference actually between Vittal Dev and Radha Gopinath. The deity, the Lord is the same. Lord has manifested himself. Not manifested. He is the deity. He is there in front of us to take darshan. But just because we have this feeling in our heart that those deities which are having much more, where people have much more desire, much more intense desire, there's so much of crowd, such a deity is much more worshipable. Like Tirupati, for example. If there are not so many people going to Tirupati, I'm sure we would not be having that intense greed to go to Tirupati. Every day we know 80, 90,000 people go to Tirupati, and we all have to stand in line for 5 hours, 6 hours just to see the deity for a few seconds. Right? But this human mind keeps telling us that to go to Balaji temple and stand in the line for 5 hours in order to take darshan of Balaji for a few seconds is much more valuable than coming to Radha Gopinath and taking darshan. It's a human mind that tells us this because of the amount of effort that we are putting in order to see the deities, one. And second, which is even more a base desire in our hearts, to achieve something that others have not. If you are able to make it for Kakad Arthi at Vittal Dev temple, if you are the first 100 to be having darshan right in front of the Lord, then you are somebody special. Yeah, it gives you a very nice feeling. And particularly if you go to the VIP entrance. I'm a VIP. You see all the others waiting over there, and then you go straight and take darshan of the Lord. So you think to yourself, I'm a VIP, so I'm entitled to this special privilege. But in one sense, actually there's no difference. Taking darshan of Lord Vittal in Pandharpur, taking darshan of Balaji in Tirupati, taking darshan of Radha Gopinath. Yet when we come for Mangalarti in the morning, when that's the best time, most auspicious time to take darshan of the Lord, are we really having that eagerness to come and take desperate shelter right in front of the deities? We are thinking that Radha Gopinath is there every day. 365 days of the year we are getting darshan of the Lord. So what's so great? I can take darshan from far away. I can be towards the end of the temple hall. What does it matter? But the Lord is seeing, are we really eager to take his darshan first thing in the morning? And that eagerness is, one way of showing that eagerness is to come right in front of the Lord. To stand in front of the Lord and take his darshan. Because when you are taking darshan of the Lord is also seeing you. So that the desperate eagerness is what the Lord actually wants to see in us. He is interested in seeing how desperate are we to take shelter of him. Is that desperation there, or is it just that because he is there, we come and take darshan? Okay, 5 o'clock, the curtain opens, so we have to take darshan, so some or the other, we get up from our bed and come over to the bathroom, have a bath and come and then stand right at the end and say somehow or the other, okay, the Lord is there, I can see him, I can see his lotus face. So this is what Srila Prabhupada is telling us, that all of us have to have a desperation, a desperate need to take shelter of Krishna. How intensely are we chanting our rounds? Are we just chanting our rounds mechanically for the sake of completing our 16 rounds? Are we actually taking shelter of the Lord in the holy names? So this is the process that Srila Prabhupada has given us, and we have to be so grateful for it. And every time we are striving to seek the shelter of the Lord desperately, to that extent we make spiritual progress. Our spiritual advancement is entirely dependent on the fact whether we are desperately trying to take the shelter of Krishna or not. So Krishna does not need us, but we desperately need Krishna. Because that is the only reason for our existence in this material world. The only reason why we have this human form of life is that we take desperate shelter of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has made this facility available to all of us. We are to be so intensely grateful. So we'll end over here. There's no time for questions, so. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. God Premanande Hari.